We're really glad you're here. We feel like Baylor, the Baylor Honors College, is going to be a great thing for you, but we also think you're going to be great for us. So thanks for choosing Baylor, and we hope that the Honors College will be a great experience for you. Do please come by and get to know us. My office is right down the hall from Dr. Corey's, and I'd love to see you as well and get to know as many of you as I can. I have a sign-up sheet on my door, so feel free to come by if there's a time you want to talk about reading or about anything else. And this was not part of my planned remarks, but let me just reaffirm what Dr. Corey said about not necessarily needing to know exactly where you're going in life. You may think you know where you're going in life. You almost certainly don't. But I started college as a physics and astronomy major and ended up getting a PhD in English. I think I still actually would have been an astronomer if the Ptolemaic cosmos had been the one that we lived in. Unfortunately, because, you know, everything was so nice. Everything was in circles. You know, the earth was nicely fixed at the center of things. But God, in his wisdom, I guess, decided to put everything in elliptical orbits. I mean, elliptical orbits are the big problem, as far as I'm concerned. And I would have been totally fine with circular orbits. But once they got elliptical, and then, like, velocity would change, you know, then you have to have this thing called calculus. Yeah. It was all looking good for me until calculus. So be open to possibility is, I think, what we're saying to you. Don't be afraid of new ideas, new options, new possibilities. So I'm going to talk to you today about reading. I wanted to have my book as a prop, and it turns out I gave away all the copies I had, so I didn't have a copy of my own book, except the Korean translation. So I brought the Korean translation. Unfortunately, I don't know a word of Korean, so it does me absolutely no good, but I needed a prop, right? I needed to be able to hang on to it. So I'm hanging on to the Korean version. I'm not going to be doing any dramatic readings from it or anything. First of all, to those of you who have read my book, thank you. To those of you who haven't yet read it, but also haven't ruled out reading it, thank you. To those of you who have no intention of ever reading it, but you came anyway, thank you. And above all, to those of you who actually paid money for the book, thank you. Thank you so much. That's what we really care about, those of us who write books. So I want to tell you something about how I came to write this book because, and it's actually, I say a bit about this in the book itself, but in one sense, it might seem an inappropriate book for you first-year students to be reading because of the circumstances in which I wrote it. I wrote it largely as a result of years of conversation that I had when I was teaching at Wheaton College. I taught there for 29 years, with graduating seniors. That is, almost all of these conversations happened in the spring semester of people's senior years. When they would come in and they would have their notebooks and they would say, you know, Dr. Jacobs, I mean, I feel like I've read a lot at Wheaton, but there's so much more that I want to read and there's so many great books that I know that I haven't read. Can you give me a list? Can you just give me a list of like the 10 books that I should absolutely read as soon as I possibly can? You know, and then they would take out their pens and they'd be ready to take down whatever I said. And my answer was, nope. No, I'm not giving you a list. And they'd be like, well, wait a minute, why not? You know, and I would say, read what you want. You've been in school for, you know, what, 16, 17 years, you know, with people telling you what to read? Read what you want. It's time. It's time for you to be on your own. It's time for you to make your own decisions. And I said that which people didn't typically like me saying. And by the way, I should have said this right at the beginning, but I'm not going to talk to you for a long time. I'm going to keep this relatively short, as short as I can, and then at the end, I'm going to take some questions, okay? So I hope you will ask some questions. Just stand up and shout when the time comes. Not now, though. Don't stand up and shout just yet. I mean, if except in enthusiasm, that'd be cool. As the more I listened to these students and the more that I talked with them and asked them questions, the more I realized two things. First of all, how much reading was wrapped up for them in performance. They were a lot like you. They were people who had a good academic record, who had been successful academically, who had applied to hard-to-get-into programs and had gotten into those programs. They were people who had done a good job of pleasing their teachers. And one of the ways that they had done that is by reading the things that they were told to read and read them as carefully as possible, which is all good, right? But for them, the whole experience of reading had gotten tied up with academic performance, with this sense that, well, that's what reading is, you know, and so I've got to keep reading the same kind of books, and I've got to keep reading, you know, difficult, challenging things, because in that way, I sort of continue to prove to myself that I'm an intellectually excellent person. And the second thing that I noticed is that, you know, when you think that way, there's a tremendous amount of anxiety associated with reading. Right? I mean, am I reading the right books? Am I reading them carefully enough? Should I be reading something else? What if people found out that I'm reading Harry Potter again? There's all this anxiety, shame, fear. And I thought, this is not good. This is not good. It's not good for you to forget all the times that you got lost in a book. Not because anybody told you to read it, not because you were going to be tested on it, not because it was something that you were going to be able to talk about and show people how smart you were because you could make a reference to this, but just because you just got lost in it, you got caught up in it, you loved it, you were fascinated by it. Maybe it was a great book, maybe it wasn't such a great book. But it was something you did for yourself. And the poet Randall Jarrell, in an essay, American poet, died in 1965, has a wonderful essay where he talks about meeting a literary critic, famous literary critic, and the literary critic saying to him that he read Rudyard Kipling's novel, Kim, every year. And Jarrell said, why did you do that? And he said, I just can't help myself, really. I just love it. And once a year or so, I think, I've got to read it again. I'm kind of that way with The Lord of the Rings. About every year, I go back and reread The Lord of the Rings. I get this sense, I've been away from it long enough, I need to go back and get into that world. I feel like it's a matter of mental and emotional health for me, right? And that's the way Kim was for him. It was a book that he just, no, I just need this sometimes. And I might read this book 20 times. I might set aside the cool new book that everybody's talking about. Or, you know, gee, I never read War and Peace. I really feel bad about never reading War and Peace. But nah, I'm not going to read that. I'm going to read Kim again. That was his attitude. And Jarrell thought that was great. That it wasn't for anybody but him. And it wasn't for anything but pleasure. And so Jarrell, at the end of his essay, when he writes about that guy, he says, I just have one thing to say to you. Read at whim. Just take a whim, take a notion, read something and that means often, as it was with this guy, rereading something you read before, rereading something you've read 5 times before. Having read something before is no reason not to read it again. If it gives you delight, if it gives you pleasure, if it gives you instruction, if it makes you feel mentally and emotionally healthier, read it again. Go back to it. So that was what I've just said to you for the last 5 minutes is what I said over the years to many, many of these graduating seniors. I said, give yourself a break. Give yourself a break. You know, get off the treadmill. Take it easy. Read something just for fun. Read something because you take a notion, not because anybody thinks you should, least of all you. And while it may seem that that's, I should be giving a different message to people who are incoming freshmen than to people who are graduating seniors. I actually want to give the same message to you, because you need to keep alive that part of yourself that takes delight in reading. You need to keep that alive. You need not to read nothing but masterpieces or nothing but what you have to read. You're using different mental muscles. You're exercising a different part of your mind when you read something for delight. It is refreshing. It's revivifying. I mentioned The Lord of the Rings a few minutes ago. When I was in my first year graduate school, I was actually, I think, not very well prepared by my undergraduate professors for graduate school. And I chose maybe some classes that were a little too difficult. And I was halfway into my first semester, and I was so far in over my head that I just didn't feel like I could ever get out from under all the stuff that was oppressing me. I actually started going around town looking for jobs. I was thinking, I'd worked in a bookstore when I was an undergrad. Maybe I could work in a bookstore. Maybe I could wait tables. Maybe I could, just find something to do. Maybe grad school isn't for me. I just need to get out of this. And when I was in the middle of that sort of existential crisis, I just happened to look at my bookshelf, and I saw there my copy of The Lord of the Rings, which I had bought a couple of years before, but I had never read. And I just thought, the heck with all this. I'm just going to read this book. And I was just married, been married a couple of months, and we had this tiny little apartment that had a little study. It was really more like a closet. It was like the Harry Potter's cupboard under the stairs more than it was an actual room. But that was where I had a desk and some books. And so I lied to my wife. It was sort of an emotional crisis for me, moral crisis. But I said, yeah, I'm going to study now. And I went in there and I put all the books I was supposed to read aside, and I read The Lord of the Rings. I spent that entire week reading The Lord of the Rings. And when I came out at the end of that week, I was a week behind on all of my work. But I felt like a new person. I felt completely revivified. I felt like I had energy that I hadn't had, and focus that I hadn't had, and concentration that I hadn't had, because I had finally sort of relaxed those tensed intellectual muscles that I had been keeping in a clinch for the previous 6 or 7 weeks. And I just relaxed that for a while and took my mind somewhere else. It was healing. And I think just in general, keeping that reading for play, reading for recreation, reading for delight as part of your life is a really terrific thing for you to do. So yeah, read the books for class. Guys, as you're in my class, read the article I assign for tomorrow, okay? Don't forget to do that. But make that time to give yourself a second life as a reader, the life of someone who's reading just for fun, just for pleasure, just for delight. It's going to be a time for you to be unplugged. It's going to be a time for you to be disconnected. It's going to be a time for you to relax those tensed intellectual muscles, an opportunity for you to get lost in a book and forget things that are weighing on you. Keeping that part of your intellectual life vibrant is, I think, key to mental health. And it's something that I think the more academic pressure there is on you, the more you're going to need to have those times of refreshment. And I think it's wonderful to do it. I mean, hey, if you're going to, binge watch Battlestar Galactica, that's totally cool too. But I do think that having the time for reading as relaxation is a way of disconnecting and moving at your own pace through something that gives you delight. So that's the main piece of advice that I want to give you. So let me just wrap up. This is my standard and most important advice for all people who are coming to college. That's the first thing. Read at whim. Read for delight. Okay? But I'm going to give you three more things. Turn off your screens an hour before you go to bed. Number two, wash your hands. Number three, buy earplugs. Okay? If you don't wash your hands, your health is at the mercy of the filthiest person in your dorm. If you do not buy earplugs, your sleep is at the mercy of the biggest jerk in your dorm. I would also say, don't be the filthiest person or the biggest jerk in your dorm. I'm just going to kind of assume that you're not that, you know. The odds suggest that some of you are. But that, I think, what you want to do, and all of these things have something in common. They're preserving the balance of your well-being in a challenging, demanding, high-energy environment. And I think being able to protect your sleep, protect your health, and protect the health of your mind are really important things for you to do. Normally, I only get to say this to the 13 people in my freshman seminar, but I got you all here, so I get to talk to you all about washing your hands and wearing earplugs. Okay, so, but even though this is supposed to be about reading, I had to get that stuff in. So let me say to you what Randall Jarrell says, and that's read at whim. Thank you for listening, and let's have a few minutes for questions, okay? Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's when it's hard, right? Because you have so much else that you have to do, right? So some years ago, I used to direct every few years a summer program in England. And we were at the end of the program, and people were doing their final papers, and there was one guy who had been up for 76 consecutive hours. He had not slept in 76 hours, and he was trying to finish his paper, and he was literally incapable. Like, he could not put two words together, you know? And he had thought, well, you know, I'm gonna conquer this with Red Bull and willpower, you know, that I'm gonna, like, get through this with Red Bull and willpower. But you push yourself past the point at which you can actually function. You know, you get, and you need to realize that. You think, I can't take a break. I can't take time off. I can't sit down and read a short story, or I can't sit down and read this essay by C.S. Lewis, or, you know, I can't read this comic book. I can't read Harry Potter. No, I've got too much to do. But you've got to learn the skills of self-assessment to know when you've reached the point that your mind isn't working anymore. And that will happen. You push yourself too hard, you'll get to the point where your mind just isn't functioning anymore. When I got to that point, I mean, through most of my life, until I became elderly, it was absolutely necessary for me to play basketball. Basketball was my number one way. Because the thing I loved about playing basketball was that I had to think when I was doing it. Like, running or being on a treadmill didn't work for me because my mind would keep coming back to all my academic stuff. But I would go play basketball, and there was enough decision making that it occupied my mind. I had to think about, am I going to shoot or am I going to pass? The answer was usually shoot. But I had to decide, you know, and that kept my mind occupied. And having your mind occupied on things other than your academic work is essential to your doing well in your academic work. That you can't do consistently well in your academic work unless you take time away from it, unless you take a mental break. And one of the best ways to do that is to read stuff that you read just for fun, because it occupies your mind. And if you don't give yourself that time of refreshment, right? Again, like, for a lot of you, it's going to be like, for me, sports or exercise is going to play a big part in that. But I think it's really important to have your mind occupied intellectually, but not with the sorts of things that you do in school. Have it occupied by very different things. So build that into your schedule. You know, just say, look, an hour before bed, I'm going to turn off the machines. because those, they have tremendously negative effects on your sleep. I mean, this is incredibly well established, right? That people, you know, I know one young woman who says that the biggest impediment to her sleep is what she calls dreamailing, which is she's actually answering texts and emails in the middle of the night. She wakes up, you know, and kind of sleepily texts somebody and then goes back to sleep and then wakes up. She calls it dreamailing. And that's deadly for your sleep. So an hour before you go to bed, then just say, you know, okay, machines off, digital world gone. You know, I'm now going to be in the analog world of paper and text, and I'm going to just move myself towards a state of relaxation. Now, for many of you, you know, a really important part of that is prayer. But I think for most of us Christians, this is certainly the case for me, I pray first thing in the morning, because if I don't pray in the morning, I'm not going to do it later on. It is, by the way, an exceptionally good cure for insomnia. Right? You know, I can't sleep, so I'll start praying for people, you know, and I'm out like almost instantly. So, but just in general, I would suggest that we're better off, you know, you pray first thing in the morning and then have that relaxing time at the end. And if you got a noisy dorm, that's what the earplugs are for. This is all about life hacking, man. I'm giving you the life hacking advice. So I know this is kind of dad talk. I understand that, but I'm a dad. So yes. Say it. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, it is, isn't it? She was just reminding me that you're required to read a book that I wrote, and here I am telling you to read. But my book is fun. Yeah, and I mean that's a fantastic question, and it's really hard. The question is, how can you recapture that? How can you do it? Okay, well, there's just a couple of things. One is that this is a bit of a repetition, but let me just try to clarify it and specify it. So the first thing is this: you know, you may have 1,000 things to read, but that doesn't mean that your brain is going to work. You know, I mean, you may have 100 pages that you need to get read by in the morning, but if your brain's not working, it's not working. It's just not, you can't flip a switch and make it. Again, Red Bull and willpower will not be sufficient in many cases. So sometimes it's best just to say, okay, it's not working. I'm going to refresh my mind with something that is delightful to me because it's not working anymore. Knowing when your brain isn't working and you can't make it work is an important part of self-knowledge. But I would say that one of the ways that you do that, I mean, so you can maybe do that in desperate circumstances when you realize that your brain has ground to a halt and it's not functioning anymore. But I would really encourage you to try to build that into your schedule. And that's why I say, you know, an hour before you think you're going to go to bed, that's when you power down the machines and that's when you start reading something for fun. Yeah, you may have stuff to do, but what you're doing is refreshing and renewing yourself so that you can. So here's what you do. This is what I do. This is what I do. In those situations when I'm tired and anxious and I got tons of stuff to do, I don't try to push it. What I do is say, I'm gonna take an hour to relax before bed and do something that delights me, and I'm gonna get up an hour early in the morning. Because I know my mind is gonna be functioning better then. And it will be functioning better then in part because I will have taken care of it tonight. My brain is going to work better tomorrow because I will have taken care of it tonight. And that's what you do, right? I mean, your brain is an incredibly important resource for you. You would not get far in life without it. So you need to take care of it. And that means not pushing it beyond what it can bear, knowing its limits, and giving it the things that it takes delight in. Do that from time to time. And your overall level of success will be better. But you have to be disciplined enough to kind of build that into your schedule and not to be running frantically behind all the time. Again, the best thing that I ever did for myself was to take an entire week of doing this at a time when I was behind already. But I had to do it because I had completely run out of mental, emotional, and spiritual gas. I had to be refueled before I could move further. So I would say, don't let yourself get in the situation that I got in. Take care of yourself every day and start tonight. Start tonight by taking some time for yourself, as busy as you are. If you got to get up a little early in the morning, get up early in the morning. You can do that, but you will be better, you will function better, and you will be happier if you take care of your mind and give it some of the things that it delights in. One more? Is that right? How much time do we have? A couple more? All right, let's take two more. There's one here and one here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I mean that's really hard, but I would say, look, I love those books too. And I love it when I do an exit interview with University Scholar and we get to sit down and talk about these books. And of course, I teach in the Great Text Program, among other things, and I get to teach those. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. And I really do delight in them. But here is something that, and I would hope that many of you will as well. But let me add one more piece to the puzzle, because I think this is important. Those books are demanding. They ask a lot of you. You know, I mean, the greatest books, when you get to be my age and you think about the books that have made the greatest impact on your life, many of those books will be books that took a lot out of you to read. They will be books that hit you really, really hard. And some of them will be great texts. Some of them will not necessarily be that. I was talking to my son over the dinner table this evening about a book that's incredibly important to me. It's by a man named Tracy Kidder, and it's called Mountains Beyond Mountains. It's the story of a doctor named Paul Farmer, who has created an organization called Partners in Health. And he's worked mainly in Haiti and Rwanda and has saved thousands and thousands of lives. And he's the closest thing to a hero that I have. And I love that book about him. It means so much to me, but I can't sit. I talked about that book with my son for 5 minutes this evening and I was in tears. And I had to go and like compose myself and get ready before I came here. The great books are demanding. They're demanding. They reach in and grab you and it hurts. And even though that may be what you love and that's what you delight, you cannot do that all the time. You cannot. Your frame is just not built for it. Just like the greatest food in the world, you know, imagine the greatest restaurants in the world, these magnificent 7-course meals at a restaurant in Paris or New York that you'll remember for the rest of your life. Try eating that way every night for a month and see how it works out for you. It won't be very well. You have to have a respite from it. W.H. Auden, the poet, who is my favorite writer, says that the great masterpieces, when you consider the demands that they place on you as a reader, he says, it's frivolous to think that you can read them every day. Frivolous. You either will be destroyed or you just won't read them well. You'll read them superficially. So even if that's what you love, even if that's what you delight, hey, if that's what you delight in, that's what you love, you're my kind of person. Let's talk, because I'm the same way. Can't do it every day. I can't do it every day. I have to have seasons of things that are less demanding on me. And then I come back to those books with a renewed vigor. So I think that's a really important point. Even if you love it, the more demanding it is, the more you have to be willing to take a break from it. Okay, I think we have time for one more. You had a question here in the front.
Hi, my name is Most of the
Why do you think that was, that you had trouble reading things even for fun? If I can ask, sorry. Don't really know. I think one of the things that happens is that, again, people begin to, once you come to associate reading with performance, academic performance, and the anxieties that go along with academic performance, that can have a negative effect even on your reading for fun. So if you're, so here's what I would say. If you're reading something for fun and you're not enjoying it, stop. Stop. You have no obligation to finish. Until I was 18 years old, I thought it was like a horrific crime to begin a book without finishing it. And then I remember the book that I finally couldn't finish. It was a book by a 20th century American writer named William Gaddis called The Recognitions. It's a novel about art forgery and full of like 75-page intellectual debates about art forgery and authenticity. And I remember the page number at which I stopped. It was page 666. And I got to page 666 and I looked at it and I thought, this is the book of the beast. I'm not reading this thing anymore. And I threw it. I literally opened the door and threw the book as far as I could. I went and picked it up later on because I don't believe in littering. But I didn't finish it, and it was an incredibly liberating thing for me. Like, you know, look, I didn't finish the book, yet I live. You know, I'm still here. I'm still breathing. And so if you're reading something for fun, you're reading something for delight, and it's not delighting you, stop. Read something else. You know, or, you know, go watch an old episode of Arrested Development or something else that's really awesome, you know? But you have to find, in a weird sort of way, you have to have the discipline to release yourself from discipline. You have to have the discipline to let go. The discipline to say, this doesn't matter. The discipline to say, there's some things that I'm going to do because I want to and only because I want to. Because that's a realm of freedom and a realm of play that is essential to human flourishing. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jacobs. I